Okay. So again, Orchot Tzadikim, we don't know who wrote it. It's always been very popular. I asked advice from a bunch of mechanchim or rabbanim of what sefer we should learn after Mesilat Yesharim, and the most popular was Orchot Tzadikim. And the introduction it's not like by the Ramchal in Mesilat Yesharim where the introduction is super important. Here the introduction is an introduction, so I figured, being that it's always good to start a new series on the right foot, rather than something boring or introductory, so I figured we'll start with the first parak, which is Shar HaGa'avah. For those who learnt with us Mesilat Yesharim, you also noticed that really in all of the books of self-improvement of Musar, Ga'ava, arrogance, is enemy number one. Anava is the most popular midah. And we'll talk about why. You could already start thinking, and I'll open up the question. But first, let's begin. Shara Ga'ava. Shara HaRishon Nidaber Al Midata Ga'ava. Out of all of the midot, character traits, midah is an important word. Midah literally means size. Right? You go to buy shoes, and they ask you, Maha midah, what's your shoe size? Which means that every midah in the right size and the right amount fits, but too much or too little doesn't fit. And usually, as everybody knows, the Rambam says, the most common way, the most common proper midah is the middle road. Right? Not between this extreme or that extreme. But we're going to see, regarding ga'ava, regarding arrogance, this is one of the two midot, where the Rambam says you have to go to the extreme. It's good to go to the extreme here. And we'll talk about that. Okay. So, Shara Rishon, Nidaber al Midata Ga'ava. And again, it's not a coincidence that this is the first midah that he deals with. Umatoshin is damen tchila lechola she'arim. This is good to be the first topic to open up the book with. Mipnei chiyuv ha'adam libadel mimena, because the obligation to distance ourselves from arrogance, kihi petach lera'ot rabot. There are certain character traits which are problematic, others very problematic. Others are not only very problematic, but they lead to a lot of problematic problems that we're going to see. V'lo ra'inu kazot lera'a bechol hamidot. We have not seen this regarding any other midah, that it is so problematic, like the midah of ga'ava. So again, it's not a coincidence that he's starting out with it. L'chein tzarich ha'adam litchakem lahanhiga el haminhag ha'ra'ui. And therefore, it's important to use this midah in the proper way. Notice that even on this midah, where the Rambam says you got to go to the extreme to distance yourself from it, nevertheless, the Orchot Tzadikim right away says that there is a time and a place for ga'ava. On the other hand, lidchot ota b'makom she'ina ru'uya bo, and to push it away when it is not proper. It's interesting, Chazal say that Talmidei Chachamim need shminit shebashminit shebaga'ava. They need 1/8 of 1/8 of arrogance. Now, what is this? 1/8 of a 1/8? That's a weird way of saying it.
Put one coin on the chessboard.
Oh, really?
That's right, yeah.
8 by 8.
Interesting. Oh, I didn't know that. The most common explanation is that 1/8 of an eighth is 1/64th, which means that it's batel b'shishim. And in other words, just like anything, even a treif that falls into a pot, if there are 60 to counterbalance it, it's okay. So too, that's the most common explanation. The Sfat Emet also says, once we're talking about the proper place for ga'ava, the Sfat Emet, I believe, or maybe it's the Chidushei Harim, I think the Chidushei Harim, asked the question, he brings a famous midrash that the Torah was given on Har Sinai because it was the lowest of the mountains. And Har Tavor said, I'm the highest mountain in Har Moria. Beit HaMikdash said, I'm more important. And all the mountains said that they're more important. And that is why the Hashem decided to give the Torah, which stresses humility, as we're going to talk about, on the lowest mountain. But the Chidushei Harim asks, why didn't Hashem give the Torah in the valley? If you really want to teach humility, so give it in the valley. And he answers exactly what the Orchol Tzadikim just said, that you need a little ga'ava. A person needs self-respect. You can't...
Confidence,
right? Without that, you can't get anything done on any topic. So there is a time and a place for this self-respect, which is a little arrogance. On the other hand, most people, and that really is one of the things regarding the Rambam, when the Rambam, maybe I'll already mention it, the Rambam in Hilchot Deot, which by the way, sometimes the Orchot Tzadikim uses the word Deot, which today we translate as opinions, but in the olden days, it used to be used as midot, character traits. Sometimes they use midah, sometimes they use deot. And when the Rambam talks about deot, as we mentioned before, he says always the golden rule is to go in the middle of the road. But then he adds in Perek Bet of Hilchot Deot, V'yesh deot she'asur lo la'adam linhog behen bebenonit, ela yitrachek min ha'katzei ha'echad an ha'katzei ha'acher. Vehu gov alev, arrogance, v'chein ha'kaas, and anger. And in all the Sifrei Musar, we'll see here too, that arrogance and anger usually go together. You know, what, you get me angry, you disagree with me, and they're very closely related, as we're going to see. But the Rambam, or and now how does he explain? He just said before in Perek Aleph that every midah you should take the middle road. The most common explanation, and it's directly connected with what we're learning, is that a person always has to ask himself, where am I? For example, am I too humble or too arrogant? And the answer is always, almost always, people are too arrogant. And therefore, they have to know which way is the middle. And on this issue, the Rambam is saying, just because the average person is so self-centered and so egoistic that if you want to really get to the middle, you have to go to the other extreme and maybe you'll end up in the middle. Okay? Anyway, so that is something special about this Midah. And again, why the Orchot Tzadikim begins with it. I'll mention another interesting explanation of this midah. The Smug, Sefer Mitzvot Gedolot, he is one of the Balei Tosfot, Hasar Moshe of Kotzi. And he writes a Sefer Mitzvot, even though the Rambam had already, 100 years beforehand, had already written his Sefer Mitzvot. So why do you need another Sefer Mitzvot? You know, it's not like today where everybody wants to print a book and, you know, get on the map. And there's always something that you can add, and today it's relatively affordable. But in the old days, it was really expensive, and you had to copy over Sfarim by hand. And so why is he doing the same thing that the Rambam did? So in his introduction, he writes why he's writing this book. First of all, he mentions that Reb Moshe ben Maimon, the Rambam, already wrote the Sefer Mitzvot, where he counts the 613 mitzvot. And the Ramban counts them a little differently. And the Yavetz counts them a little differently. And the Vilna Gaon actually says that there are more than 2,000 mitzvot deoraita. Now, problem is, the Gemara Masechet Menachot says that we have a tradition that there are 613. How do we squish 2,000 into 613? Well, that's really the challenge. There's usually no nafkamina. There's no practical difference if it's on the list or not. Nevertheless, so there are a lot of different opinions. And the Smug is said that Kinyan Mar'e B'Chalom, Hashem came to him in a dream. and told him, "Asay Sefer Torah, Mishnei Chalakim, Mitzvot Tasei and Mitzvot Lo Tasei." And even though the Rambam already did it, Hashem tells the Smag in this dream that there are certain things that the Rambam left out that really should be in. So if Hashem tells you such an assignment, right? I would do it.
You have a dream that Hashem talks to you in the middle of the night. Isn't that like a Navi Sefer or something?
Okay. So first of all, he doesn't say it's Nivuah. He doesn't say it's Nivuah. He says it's a dream. And then, at the end of his introduction, he says, he gets the second dream. He doesn't call it a dream. He doesn't call it a chalom. I'll read it to you. Gam b'inyanei alavin ba elai. Here he says b'chalom. Right, I stand corrected. Inyan mar'e b'ze. He calls it a maran. He calls it a chalom. I just read what it says here. Hinei shachachta et ha'ikar. You, just like the Rambam, forgot certain mitzvot. You forgot the most important mitzvah, which, by the way, is not on the Rambam's list of mitzvot either. And this time, he asks Hashem, what is the most important mitzvah?
So why did Hashem give this dream to the Rambam 100 years previously?
These are good questions. Yes, good questions. But nevertheless, first of all, you know what? I'll tell you already his last line in his introduction. And he says, I'm not making this up. Now, if you're reading his book, I guess you trust him. So, and he is one of the Balei Tosfot. But what is the most important mitzvah? He must be bimetach, tension. So he says, what is the mitzvah that you forgot, and the Rambam forgot? Hine shachachte et ha'ikar, hishamer lecha pen tishkach et Hashem Elokecha. Don't forget Hashem. Where does this learned out from? The Gemara Masechet Sotah says from the pasuk, v'ram levavcha v'shachachte et Hashem Elokecha. If you're arrogant, you forget about God. And it's a good question why the Rambam wasn't zochet to have such dreams. I definitely never had such dreams. And the Smag, by the way, when he lists the mitzvot, and this I just noticed today, I never noticed this before, on his list of the mitzvot, he writes as follows. He lists the 613 mitzvot. And he writes as follows. This is mitzvah 64. Hishamer lecha pen tishkach et Hashem Elokecha. Lav ze ne'emar elai b'mara likotvo. I was told in this dream or vision to write this mitzvah. V'yisarativ azhara ligasei haruach. V'acharechen, afterwards, after Hashem told me, matzati b'masechet sota. I found the source of Masechet Sota. Now, why did the Rambam not count this, and the Ramban doesn't count it? And really nobody, I think, except for the Smug and the Smuck, count it. You have to remember that every mitzvah has to be able to be observed by every 13-year-old boy and every 12-year-old girl. And it takes years to be able to control midot. And that's why, in general, midot, character traits, are not in the Taryag mitzvot. So it's more logical not to list it as a mitzvah. But why did I bring this whole thing? That just like the Rambam says, this is one of the two character traits that you have to go to the extreme. The Smag was told in his dream, this is the most important mitzvah. Not only is it a mitzvah, but it's the most important one. So is that a coincidence that we're starting out with this? Before we go on, let me ask you, why are the Sifrei Musar fixated on arrogance or humility? What are the advantages of humility? That's something that I learned didactically today. We have to know, And that's who we are. We have to know, what are the benefits? What do I gain from being humble? Not just that it's
when
an ideal.
When you're humble, you're open to learning. And when you're arrogant, I know everything.
Speak up. Yeah.
When you're arrogant, you know everything. I don't need to know, learn anything. When you're humble, it's like, well, I don't know anything. I'm willing to learn whatever you tell me. I'm willing to learn everything.
Right. So we always say, as Rav Kook always says, that all of life is growing and evolution. And we all want to grow. And somebody who, very important point, right? Talmud Torah Keneged Kulav. If you think you know everything, you're never going to grow. What else?
Where you can't even accept what Hashem says, because you're the center of the universe.
Very
you're
important.
The center of the universe, Hashem's. Mm-hmm. Not there.
Right? Mitzvot Bein Adam Lemakom, and that's one of the Gemarot that he's going to bring. The Gemara in Sota that I quoted before, Daf Hei, says that it's like in the Western movies, you know, when the sheriff tells the bad guy, there ain't enough room in this town for the two of us. And that's what the Gemara says, that Hashem says to the arrogant person, somebody who inflates himself so much he doesn't leave room for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not only that, religiously, you know, arrogant people don't like to be told what to do. So he's going to have a religious problem. Ben Adam Lemakom. Now, as soon as you mention Ben Adam Lemakom, let's think Ben Adam Lechavero. What's the problem with being arrogant?
You're not open to listening, to accepting anybody else. If it's all about
to
me,
doing chesed,
it's you know, nobody else matters as much.
Right? There's no ben adam lechaverov.
There's no room for anybody else.
Exactly. Right? It's really, if I were to say, the common denominator of all the mitzvot between man and his fellow man is that you have to take them, the other person, into account and do chesed and return lost objects and don't talk lashon hara, etc., etc. And it all gets back to being humble, right? And you don't want, how does the Gemara word the klal? Don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. And the same thing, even the positive, is the same. V'avtal re'acha kamocha. Love others like you want to be loved. So it's very beneficial to be friendly socially, right? We all know people have more friends when they're humble. What else? Rav Kook writes in Orot HaKodesh that arrogant people are not in touch with reality. They just like inflate themselves in a way that, you know, they think they're smarter than they really are. And if you want to live a life of truth and know who you really are, so you have to have that humility. Another point that actually I spoke about today in Petach Tikva, that Rav Soloveitchik, in the context of Rosh Hashanah Davka, mentions, why do we read Akedat Yitzchak on Rosh Hashanah? That's the Torah reading. And to the same extent, the Shulchan Aruch says we should read Akedat Yitzchak every day. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. Men do it. Women don't have to. But it's right after Berchot HaShachar, you'll notice in the Sidur. And there are a lot of different explanations, but the Rav Soloveitchik explains that Akedat Yitzchak teaches in one word what he calls surrender. That even though Hashem says child sacrifice is a toeva, is disgusting, and Avram is a nice person, and he's against it, and God is against it, so why? What's going on? Why is he telling me to do this? That is what's called Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim. That I'm going to do what Hashem tells me to do, even if it's totally illogical, it's against the Torah, it's against my nature, it's against goodness. And this is connected with the Kabbalistic idea of Tzimtzum. Are you familiar with the concept of Tzimtzum? Tzimtzum is that the Kabbalist asks, how did Hashem create the world? And the answer is, he limited himself, as if it were. Hashem is here, there, everywhere, and he is unlimited and in Sofi. So how did he create the world? He, as if it were, limited himself, just like in the Mishkan, where v'shachanti betocham, Hashem limits himself into the Beit HaMikdash. So too, Hashem, as if it were, limits himself when he created the world. And Rav Soloveitchik explains, this is the idea of humility. That even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whole world was created based on this idea of surrender, of altruism. which leads us to something that we learned in Mesilat Yesharim, that the Ramchal asked, why did Hashem create the world? He's perfect. He didn't need anything. And he answers, out of altruism. Chesed shelemet. Because altruism, by definition, is that even if you're not gaining anything, you're not lacking anything, you still want to give and give and give and give. That's the definition of altruism, you know, even if you're not lacking anything. Bekitzur, in a nutshell, this is one of the reasons why the Rambam and the Smag and really all of the Musar books put arrogance and humility as number one. Okay, let's go on. Hagaava hi amatbeya asher pasal amelech hagadol baruch hu. Interesting way of putting it. You all know that governments in the old days, kings, used to mint coins. And there are certain coins that they decide are usable and certain coins that are no longer in,
Circulation.
Right? So the king, that's God, he decided, he decided that this is a character trait which is should be out of circulation. V'zhiranu aleha b'torato, and Hashem commanded us in the Torah, k'mo she'ne'emar, yishamer lecha pen tishkach et Hashem asher hotziacha meretz Mitzrayim. Again, this is the source that the Smag brings, that if you're arrogant, you could forget Hashem.
Oh, you can open the gate.
Okay, and like Sarah said, it's not a small thing to forget Hashem. That's the basis. Ki age'e yishkach yotzro. Because when a person is arrogant, he forgets his creator. Ki dichtiv uvikarcha v'tzoncha yirbiyun v'kesev v'zahav yirbelach v'ram levavcha v'shachachte et Hashem Elokecha. That when a person becomes wealthy and he pats himself on the back and he attributes his success to me, myself, and I, he forgets HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is really the one who gave him the success, who gave him the brains, who gave him the education, who gave him the business acumen, right? As much as a person works. We all know people who work and don't succeed. And so you have to remember to thank Hashem. V'amarta bilvavcha kochi v'otzem yadi asal yetecha yelazeh v'zacharta et Hashem Elokecha. No, you should remember the Lord your God, ki hu had noten lecha koach lasot chayil. It's not that you should not recognize your talents. You should recognize your talents, but thank Hashem for giving them to you. Right? Don't forget the address, the source. Uvemelech ne'emar, regarding a king, it says, why does the king have to have a sefer Torah that goes around with him wherever he goes? Levilti ron levavo me'achav, so that he should not become arrogant compared to the rest of the people. Now, im hizhira Torah afilu b'melech, even a king who really is above everyone else, even he should not raise himself above everyone else. What does that mean? He is above everyone else. So, whenever I see this idea, I remember in elementary school. We used to have picture day.
Yeah.
Chet Ross, and he used to come around the different schools. And the first thing he tells is to ask the kids to line up by height, right? And that's the way he arranges everything. Who's in the first row, who's in the second row. And I was always short, so I was always in the front row. And I don't know how it is by the girls, but the boys are always, you know, it's like an ego thing. I'm taller than you, I'm taller than you. Back to back, and they go like this, you know, look, I'm taller than you are. And I remember as an eighth grader on picture day, you see these little first graders saying, oh, I'm taller than you by this much. And they're all a bunch of midgets, you know. So, like, compared to me, you know, they're little nothings. So that's really what the pasuk is saying. You know, even if you are the king, and compared to the plebs, maybe you are significant, and they think you're significant, and you think you're significant. If you okay, so you're a little greater than they are, but compared to Hashem, you know, there's no, you're a little nothing. You know, you're just like everyone else.
And if you're a king, you have to work even harder not to become arrogant because of that.
Right? Right? That's why the Torah tells you you can't have too much money and too many horses and too many wives. So the Torah even warns a king. Kol shekein be'ed yotot. How much more so if the king is told not to be arrogant? What does that mean? Even the king?
Because he has a reason to be.
Yeah. Today, it's so difficult for us to imagine what it is to be a king. Amnon Shapira, Hillel's father, Zichrono Livracha, right before he passed away, he put out a new book on the 80 revolutions of the Torah, and I strongly, strongly recommend it. And I'm helping them translate it to English, not as the translator, but like a yoetz. And one of the revolutions of the Torah is you will not find in it what he does, and this is very good because I never learned Semitic or Far East cultures. He compares the Torah with everything that was around 3,300 years ago. And nobody, until mamash recently, like 250 years ago, with democracy and with the French Revolution, nobody ever talked about that the king has limitations. The king is the king. And even we see in the Tanakh that there were some kings that acted like kings, and the Tanakh takes them to task. Because a Jewish king is not supposed to be like a regular king. When Ahav takes away the Kerem Navot, right? And he's called to task, and he's killed for it. But that's what kings used to do. And the same thing, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but everybody asked about David HaMelech taking Bathsheba. The truth is, that's what kings used to do everywhere. If a king saw a woman, he would take her. Sometimes, yafeh, Avimelech and Paro Nachon. Right, that was the norm that they used to take any woman that they wanted. And here comes the Torah and says, "No, you can't do. There is someone above you." So the king, like Sarah says, he has a reason, especially in the olden days, right? He had a reason to think he can do whatever he wants, and he is above everyone else. But how much more so we, who are not kings, right? Even if a person is a minister, he's not king. There is only one king. And there's only room for one king. And there's only room for one king above that king. And that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shelo yistaru ze al ze. Man is not meant to rule over his fellow man. So today it's sort of difficult to understand, you know, when Putin gets up and acts like a jerk, you know, and say he just wants to take over Ukraine and conquer the world, or remember Saddam Hussein, he just went and took Kuwait. Today, you can't go to the United Nations and say, well, I can, so I will, you know. That's not accepted. In the time of the Orchot Tzadikim, if you can, you did. And that's what kings did. They did anything that they wanted to. And that's why the Torah says, no, even kings are not allowed to be arrogant. Hagava mitchaleket l'shnei chalakim. We're in the third paragraph. I have it as the third paragraph. I'm curious.
It is here too.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, you have it divided into paragraphs. You also in your edition? Yeah, okay. Hagava mitchaleket l'shnei chalakim. There are two types of arrogance. Ha'echad ge'ut ha'adam begufo. Physical arrogance, which is what we're going to talk about first. And v'achelik hasheni, the second is ge'ut ha'adam b'ma'alot ha'chochma u'v'ma'asav, intellectual or religious arrogance, which is a little more complicated. That's we're going to talk about second. Ge'ut ha'adam b'gufo yesh bo shnei chalakim. Okay, so the first thing, physical arrogance, has two parts. Ha'echad tov ve'echad ra. One which is good, and the other which is bad. And again, one of the things that's interesting about Orchot Tzadikim, and that's one of the reasons why I chose it, it's not just don't. He tells you when to use a midah properly. When is the proper place for that midah? Vezoti geuta adam begufo hara. But we're going to start out with the negative things. Be'it shetitgaber ha'ga'ava b'lev ha'adam. When a person is arrogant, az timshol ala adam mikod kodo ad kaf raglo, his entire body, his entire being, is conquered by this problematic trait. Birosho ubigrono. Let's start from the top. In his head, and even his
throat,
his neck. Kidichtiv, as it says in Yeshayahu, Ya'an ki gavu b'not zion v'telachna netuyot garon. Right? The Navi says that one of the problems that the women at the time, this is right before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, that the women were arrogant and they would walk around with their necks up in the air. Or I guess today you would say your nose up in the air. And that's a physical thing. Biyadav uberaglav, also with your hands and your feet. Dichtiv al tivoeni regel ga'ava. V'yad resha'im al tenideni. Right? A person can walk arrogantly. Remember, I had a...
Struts, you know?
Yeah, exactly, a strut. That's the word I was looking for. I remember... I had a... we had a neighbor. You never met him. They moved away. I don't think you met any of my neighbors.
No,
Anyway, this kid, I must have been like 13, and he must have been like 11. One day, I just noticed that he's walking differently. It's like strutting. I said to him, Michael, what happened? He said, what do you mean? I said, why are you walking funny? And he said, let me resist. I'm the Fonz. Did that make it over to England?
No, it's Henry Winkler's.
Oh, Henry Winkler. Yeah.
Henry Winkler.
Yeah. Henry Winkler, happy days.
Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
Happy
days. His parents are religious.
I don't know. I think he's from the...
Yeah.
Yes.
He is with the black jacket and the greased hair from the 50s. And this guy was trying to walk and strut like the Fonz. And he really looked stupid. But that is the way arrogant people look. Sometimes they just, you know, hold themselves in a certain manner. And they do certain things with their hands. I don't know if you can think of it. I don't know. You know, they just act differently.
They do. They control you by doing this. You know, if you look at politicians,
like putting their hand on you,
their
interesting.
Hand on. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're more important. You know?
Uh-huh.
Controlling.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right?
Okay.
The aregel ga'ava ne'encha bat Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion shenigzara le'a le'shev bakuba. We know the word Kuba from up the mountain. Here he translates it as a ohel, as a tent, but it's really any kind of like small building. But Kuba shel zonot, she was taken captive and put as a prostitute. Why? Ki pam achat halcha lifnei gdolei Romi, v'shama she'amra, she overheard them saying, hey, kama na'a psioteha shel ribazu. Look how nice this girl is walking. And va'az dikdika yoter, and she said, "Hey, if they're really noticing how I walked, I'll walk even nicer." Oh. And that's why she was punished. Be'einayim, arrogance is seen in your eyes. Kidichtiv einayim ramot, right? To have high, haughty eyes. Nachan, it's from Mishlei. And this I've also seen. I've seen, you ever notice some people that when they look at you, even if you're like the same height.
Looking almost down at
yeah,
you.
Yeah, they look down at you, exactly. Bo'oznayim, with their ears. Lo yishma divrei aniyim umlalim. An arrogant person, it's not that you see their ears do something different, but they don't hear the pleas of the poor, of those who are needy, who are asking them for help. Bereach apo, even on their nose. Be'omdo etzel aniyim, o keshe nichnas lebateihem, hem sruchim be'inav. They smell in his eyes. He can't stand the smell of people who in those days they couldn't afford showers or deodorants ve'af bidvarav, and even in his mouth, yidaber al tzadik atak bega'ava, even great tzadikim, the arrogant person will put them down. There's a interesting autobiography of a famous Jewish person who is not religious, and I won't mention his name, but he writes why he left religion. And he says, you know, obviously these are complex things, but he points out that when they used to come home from shul, his parents used to talk Lashon Hara about the rabbi's drasha. It wasn't on a high enough level, or it wasn't deep enough, or it was too long, he said, I got in the habit of looking down at the rabbi. That's exactly the example that the Orchot Tzadikim is giving. By the way, that's something important to know. Obviously, we all know rabbis are not perfect, but when you put them down in front of your children, that is, you know, children see things in black and white. And that is something you just have to be very... So, you should never speak in terms of Lashon Hara about anyone. Also regarding Kavod HaTorah. But how much more so regarding your children, where this famous Jewish personality said that he felt as a kid that he began to be that much more critical of religion. So all of these, again, your words, your nose, your ears, it all is connected with, is taken over by arrogance. V'gam nikeret b'inyan ma'achal u'mashke u'b'mambushei b'gdei ga'ava. Malbushei nochri. People eat arrogantly. They dress arrogantly. They wear the clothing of goyim. V'alzehu zharnu b'torat Moshe. This is interesting. We'll explain this in a minute. Shneamar lo telchu b'chukot ha'goy. If you look in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch, the definition, there's a famous tshuva of the Maharil, that the definition of chukot ha'goyim is to dress in an arrogant or not a tsanua way. That's the definition. That goyim were seen as arrogant. I guess they used to look down at Jews, so that's the way Jews saw the goyim. Uchtivu v'chukoteim lo telechu. Don't be like the goyim. Is talking about arrogance. Don't be attracted to be like the goyim. Hakol binyan echad umazir. All of this is the same warning. She Yisrael muvdal b'malbushav u'bidvarav u'vechol minagav minagoyim. That a Jew should dress different and act different from the goyim. By the way, the classic example brought down in Masechet Sanhedrin, I think is Daf Ayin Dalid, that says that if the goyim wear a red shoelace and Jews wear black shoelaces. And I think it's Rashi who points out that red is like a color of arrogance. It sticks out. It's not considered tsanua. And the Jews would not wear red. Then that even becomes Yareg Va'al Ya'avor. For a Jew, you're not allowed to wear red shoelaces, even if it's not in the Torah. If that's the way the goyim dress, and what is the way the Jews dress? We dress, we don't attract attention.
But why is that Yareg Va'al Ya'avor?
Because that is an issue. Because there's a way the Jews dress, there's a way the goyim dress. If you choose to dress like the goyim, in that arrogant or lo tsanua fashion, that becomes Yareg Va'al Yavor. That's what's called Chat Shmad. Something that the Jews all do a certain way, and that's Rashi's
why the
explanation.
Maybe didn't change their clothing for 100 years, I mean, anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the last, just the last 150 years. So
we'll share the same dress these days, you know, we'll go to the same Walmart or whatever else you go.
Fox. So that
Fox is Israeli, so that's like no.
Fox is Israeli?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I
don't
think so.
No,
I thought it was a chain.
No, I thought you said it was a chain. Do we see?
No, we didn't see Fox in America.
There's no Fox in America.
Fox is a Jewish name.
No, I was talking to some I was excited because I saw the things that he was at. They had mango and H&M.
Anyway, either way, like the...
Yeah.
The American shops want to be like, you know.
So it's interesting what you say, because also halachically, Jews, even if chilonim dress like goyim, a religious Jew is not allowed to dress like a goy, not only because of the laws of tzniut, but because of the iser d'oraita of uvechukoteim lo telechum.
What does that mean? That we all go to the same shops.
No, but you don't wear sleeveless shirts.
But that's tzniut.
That's
Nachum, but the isur of uvechukoteim lo telechu raises that to an iser d'oraita, because to dress in a way that attracts attention, that is tzniut by definition. But, and that's what the Orchot Tzadikim is saying, that also rises to a higher level, that it's even de'oraita, because Jews are supposed to be, it's interesting, the Rambam, we all know, is very rational. And out of all the Rishonim, the Rambam has the most, he and the Meiri have like the most respect for Gentiles, and but even the Rambam, in Hilchot Yisurei Biyah, he writes that the three signs, it's mentioned in the Gemara, but what surprises, the Rambam brings it la'alacha, that the three signs of Jews are rachmanim, baishanim, gomlei chasadim. And if you see somebody who is arrogant, and who is not merciful, and who does not give chesed, you shouldn't make a shidduch with them for their child, because the odds are pretty good they're not Jewish.
Say that again? So those three things again?
Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomlei Chasadim. Rashi Tevot Gever, if you want to remember it.
Wearing red in the Haredi world.
They were only black.
It's a complete usher.
But it's not really found in the poskim. There is a Gemara that infers, you know, but then the poskim deal, what is red? You know, is this red? Is it? So like, shouting out red is more a problem, but shouting out yellow is also
yellow
a problem. You know, fluorescent colors today is...
Yeah, they don't wear bright colors, though.
Nachan?
Sometimes they do. I'll never forget the first time I ever went to the place.
Just speak up.
18 years old, I was a very young girl, and I was learning all these halachas, and I knew that red was awesome. I saw a Haredi woman the first time coming down to the coastal. She was dressed in a bright emerald green, and it was dish off. She said, there's something very wrong. I didn't understand it. I thought, this is as bright as red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is she wearing a shirt? It's obviously very, very full. I didn't know many full people then. I saw she's wearing bright emerald green on T-shirt, and I thought,
so that's exactly what the Orchot Tzadikim is saying, that a person should not dress in a way that attracts attention. And again, the poskim deal with red just like other colors. The problem is to sa'akanut, I would just say that.
Shouting out,
here I am, you know, look at me. And that... that is a problem. So again, to summarize, we'll finish up with this, that that when a person is arrogant, it basically takes over their personality in every aspect, from their feet to their head, and the way they walk and the way they talk. And by the way, and this is connected with what Rav Kook said that I quoted before in Orot HaKodesh, arrogant people usually are not connected with reality and don't realize what other people think of them. Mm-hmm. And I remember in our high school basketball team, we had a secret ballot for captain. Mm-hmm. And there was one guy who was sure he would be elected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was arrogant. And truth is, he averaged more points than anyone because he shot twice as much as anyone, you know. So sometimes it went in, but usually not. Anyway, he was really, really arrogant. And what's good about a secret ballot is that's when people let you know what they really think about you. And he lost, and I won. And he never passed the ball to me for the rest of the year. In other words, you know, the goal is to win. And this guy is, everything is self-defeating when you are arrogant. But getting back to the main point, he is not realistic. And everyone else, you know, realizes that this guy is a problem. And just like anybody who overinflates himself, it's just a matter of time before somebody takes a little needle and pricks their ego and brings them back to reality. So we'll stand here. Zat Hashem, we'll try and make, just like all new shiurim, especially make a conscious effort to start on time. Unless you prefer, is it objective that it's always better to start at 8:35? Because if it's 8:35, then it'll turn into 8:40 and 8:45.